April Fool's.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
That creates my... Right. Greetings from behind the good old stainless steel working class microphone here in Washington, D.C. Nice one, Shano. Oh, man. Welcome to our program. You know, we've seen... I want to open this first hour talking about... We have, I believe it's three now law enforcement officials who've been murdered in the last week or so, the last couple of weeks. And last Friday on the TV show, I had a half-hour conversation, our Conversations of the Great Minds. You can see it over at conversationsofthegreatminds.com, with a fellow who wrote a book about the FBI's infiltration of the Muslim community and how, in many cases, they're basically setting up people who had perhaps the motive, but certainly not the means or the opportunity to do anything. And they provided that. And, I mean, that was a piece of the book. The larger part of the book is that, you know, we really do want the FBI to be keeping an eye out. I mean, the FBI arguably had enough information between the FBI and CIA that they could have put a stop to what turned out to be the 9/11 attacks if they had just been communicating well and you know, without replowing that ground. I don't think that there's anybody in the United States who doesn't think that the FBI should be, you know, doing their job, should be looking into this kind of stuff, except conservatives. Back in April of 2009, remember this? This was, you know, month three of the Obama administration, month four, and the Department of Homeland Security releases a report titled, quote, "Right-wing extremism, current economic and political climate fueling resurgence in radicalization and recruitment," end quote. Now, this followed by a couple of months, a similar report on left-wing activities. But this one detailed the rise of right-wing, which nobody said a word about. It's like, yeah, okay, you got these people putting nails in trees and doing vandalism and set a car dealership on fire, a Hummer dealership, as I recall, and that kind of thing. But this report detailed the rise in right-wing extremist activity in the United States. And, in fact, said that they included, quote, "groups and individuals that are dedicated to a single issue such as opposition to abortion or immigration," end quote. In fact, they clearly defined what they were all about. They said, quote, "Homeland Security Office of Intelligence and Analysis defines," quote, subquote, "right-wing extremism in the United States as including not just racist or hate groups, but also groups that reject federal authority in favor of state or local authority," end quote. In other words, the Tenthers, the so-called Patriot Movement, the so-called militia movement. Now, this report was solid. It was factual. It was matter of fact. It was an honest attempt by the Department of Homeland Security to start a discussion about a very real homegrown terrorist threat. And because of that, conservatives went insane. I mean, John Boehner just got, it was like, somebody opened a fire hose. He had this tsunami of calls and emails from viewers of Fox News who are all hysterical about this, listeners to right-wing talk radio, readers of white-wing websites. Oh my God, what are they doing? Right? And so in a very public statement, John Boehner came out and demanded that the Department of Homeland Security Chief Janet Napolitano provide, his words now, "an explanation for why she has abandoned using the term terrorist to describe those such as Al-Qaeda who are plotting overseas to kill innocent Americans, while her own department is using the same term to describe American citizens who disagree with the direction Washington Democrats are taking our nation." Whoop. Pass me another cigarette, please. End of quote. The report... probably another martini. The report received so much heat from the right that Napolitano was forced to withdraw it. Although that similar report on left-wing extremism, radical, violent environmentalists, for example, No similar rebuke was not withdrawn. Nobody was all hysterical about it. So while kids like Aaron Swartz face decades in jail, or at least he did before he killed himself, right-wing extremist groups have apparently been overlooked by our federal government. So it probably shouldn't come as that much of a surprise when gun-toting members of far-right extremist groups start coming out of the woodwork and murdering government officials. I mean, after all, you got the language out there. You hear callers to this program all the time. I got to have my guns to take on an oppressive government. Well, how do you do that? Well, how do you shoot somebody? Saturday night before Easter, Texas District Attorney Mike McClellan and his wife Cynthia were shot to death in their Kaufman County, Texas home. They were the latest victims of a recent string of shootings of government and law enforcement officials. In fact, I think you could track this back. It's kind of started with Gabby Giffords. And it's got an eerie echo of another time when we had a lot of assassinations of government officials in this country that started with Jack Kennedy and ended with Martin Luther King. The deaths of McClellan and his wife come just 2 months after Kaufman County Assistant District Attorney was shot and killed, which led to suspicions that law enforcement officials were being targeted by a white supremacist group. And authorities are now looking into whether or not McClellan's slaying is related to the shooting deaths of Tom Clemens, who's the guy who ran the Colorado prisons. He was apparently shot and killed by a member of a white supremacist group just a few weeks ago. So we don't know yet all the details of the McClellan shooting. I mean, it just happened day before yesterday. But the Denver Post reported this past Thursday that the gun used to shoot and kill Clemens was bought by a straw purchaser. Clemens' killer, a guy by the name of Evan Ebel, was a white supremacist gang member and felon who was barred under federal law from purchasing and possessing a gun. So Ebel had 22-year-old Stevie Marie Vigil go to a gun store for him and legally purchase the gun that he used to kill Clemens. It's called using a straw purchaser. This is one of the most common ways criminals get their hands on guns. Why? Because straw purchasers almost never go to jail. According to the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives, what we used to call the ATF, they say straw purchasing of guns is the single most common method by which firearms move between the legal and illegal market.
When the guns are outlawed, only criminals will have guns. Well, no.
Turns out straw purchasers are the ones who give the guns to the criminals. 46%, this is from the ATF, 46% of guns related to illegal gun trafficking, straw purchasers. And when they do get caught, like in the case of Stevie Marie Vigil, the penalties are nothing. Extremely weak. Speaking about the Clemens murder case, Brad Beiersdorf, a spokesman for the ATF in Denver, told the Denver Post, quote, there's little to no punishment for being a straw purchaser. Gang members know it. Drug trafficking organizations know it. End of quote. So how do we fix this? Well, A, I think we need to strengthen our laws against straw purchasers. And B, let's start treating guns like cars. Had Stevie Marie Vigil purchased a cheap used car for a 14-year-old boy and given him the keys, and then that young man had killed someone, she would be facing manslaughter, accessory to manslaughter charges in almost every state. We need to register guns, insure guns, and license gun owners. It's the same thing we do with cars.
Yeah, but your right to have guns in the Constitution
says your right to have a car. Implicitly. Article 1, Section 8, Sentence 7 of the U.S. Constitution gives Congress the right to raise taxes and spend money to create roads. Time to wise up.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And time to seriously start looking at these right-wing groups that are operating in the United States that represent, I think, more of a threat to us than Al-Qaeda. Welcome back to the place where smart people get their news, the Tom Hartman Program. And Larry in Charleston, Arkansas, it says you want to disagree with me?
Well, not exactly, Tom. You know, I'm going to sort of give my little spiel on gun control. Here's okay. The way I look at it. You know, the Founding Fathers were real educated people for their day, you know.
I agree.
Pretty intellectual, you know. And, you know, for that time of history, you know, they laid out the Constitution. Then they laid out a Second Amendment to that Constitution, you know. They said the people have a right to be armed, you know. They didn't say people have a right to have hunting rifles. Didn't have a...
No, they said it was in order to have a well-regulated militia.
Okay, well, they meant armed. You know, what they were meaning when they said armed was against their own government. You know, they were...
No, it was not true. That's not true, Larry. That is absolutely not true.
You know?
Larry, you're wrong. There was, and I encourage you to go back and read the debates. They are there. In fact, the easiest ones to access are the ones at the Virginia Ratifying Convention, because there's a long discussion there between George Mason, Patrick Henry, and James Madison on the Second Amendment, where it came from, why they were passing it, what was going on. You know, for them, a lot of it had to do with keeping their slave patrols going in the South. But the bottom line is that nobody ever, when the Second Amendment was being contemplated, when the Second Amendment was being debated, none of those guys ever said people need to have arms so they can shoot at us, because those guys were the government. They never ever.
Yeah, they were, but
they never
were familiar ever with tyrants. Though,
no,
Tom.
they were concerned.
With, yep.
They had two concerns, Larry. The number one was that we be able to defend our shores. In other words, we'd be able to protect our government.
Yeah, right on. Yeah.
And well, and so we had to have a militia to do that, and they did not. And their concern, they were fine with a standing navy at all times, but they did not want a standing army. This was their second concern, principally of the northern states. They wanted there only to be an army during times of war and during times of peace. It should be a citizens' militia. And down in the South, of course, they wanted the citizens' militia to be available as the slave patrols to keep the slaves, you know, in line, to be riding around the back roads looking for runaway slaves.
Okay, Tom, if that's true, why did they put the Second Amendment in there? Why didn't they just say we want to have a military with people in it armed?
They did, Larry. Read the Second Amendment. It starts out by saying, actually, let me get the exact language here. Amendment 2. A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. They were saying, we want militias, not armies. In Article 1, Section 8, they put a limitation on the army.
Well,
they said that you cannot appropriate funds for
like
an army for any period more than 2 years.
They wanted something like the National Guard that was sort of in the background to the actual federal military. Is that it?
That is exactly right. They wanted every state to have what today we would call a National Guard, and for there to be no army unless we were in a war.
I say, okay, so I have no right to arm myself against my own government then. Is that what you're saying?
That was not the intent of the founders. Now, you may have that right or you may not, depending on what the Supreme Court has to say on any given day of the week. They've changed their mind a few times over the last decade. But to the best of my knowledge, the Supreme Court has never said that you have the right to arm yourself against your own government. In fact, the whole point of our small r Republican government is that we can take on our government in the ballot box.
Yeah, okay.
You know, do you seriously think, Larry, that you and a bunch of your friends, if you've got enough guns, are going to be able to take on either the state of Arkansas or the United States of America? Do you seriously think that?
No, I don't actually believe.
Then why even go down that road?
Right, you know. I think I have the right to be able to try that if I'm.
Well, you know there were people, Larry. There were people in Arkansas who thought that in 1862, and we litigated that, right? And the folks down in Arkansas lost.
Well, I ain't after the black people. I love the old black people there, fella.
Larry, I'm not talking about race. I'm talking about the Civil War. The Civil War was when people, which of course was about race, but my point is that we, you know, that whether the people have the right, whether individual states or people within those states have the right to challenge the federal government, that was litigated by the Civil War. And there was a decision. The South surrendered the North won. We put in the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendments to the Constitution. We put an end to it, end to slavery, and we put an end to the separation of you know, from the state. And in fact, in the 14th Amendment, I believe it is, could be the 15th, but I'm pretty sure it's the 14th. It even explicitly says, I'm quite sure it's the 14th now that I think of it, it even explicitly says that the full faith and credit of the United States shall not be questioned, except when it comes to paying off the debts of the South in the Revolutionary War, or in the Civil War, when the Confederacy.
I don't know why you won't drag me back in that Civil War, you know? I don't really understand that, but
why am I saying this? Because you're talking about
your arguments.
You're saying that you think that states or individuals have the right to separate from or challenge the federal government through use of arms.
To defend myself against an unjust government, you know, which could happen, you know.
Tell me what would it take, Larry, Larry, serious question. We just have 30 seconds. What would it take for you to stand out in front of your house with weapons and defend yourself against the government?
If somebody came out here, you know, unjustly, you know, with automatic weapons, you know, what you call assault rifles, I think I have the right to defend myself against that kind
of... What is unjust?
You know, of course, I'm going
to
be...
What is it that they would be doing that would cause you to think that you have a justification to shoot at a government official?
What if it's unjust? You know,
what is unjust? Give me an example.
I'm tyrant.
Give me an example.
Tyrant.
Give me an example. You mean like enforcing Obamacare?
Can never happen this time.
Give me an example.
Tell me it never happened.
Okay, you don't have an example. I got it. Larry, thank you very much for the call. Maybe somebody else will. 27 minutes past.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Or maybe Larry was just calling in the spirit of April Fool's Day. But I don't think so, and that's the thing that concerns me. We'll be right back. Helping you in the water cooler wars. Speaking of war, let's just be clear about what the real gun debate is in America, what it has come down to. And that is whether or not Americans have the right to have weapons of war in their homes and to carry them around on our public streets. In a war situation, it's necessary, tragically, to kill many people very quickly. And so a clip that holds 30 rounds of ammunition or 50 rounds of ammunition or even 100 rounds of ammunition makes sense on the battlefield. But in civilian domestic life, it makes no sense. Even target shooters wouldn't use clips like that. And I'm speaking as somebody who is a target shooter, has done target shooting, and has used large clips. You know, one time I fired off, must have been 30 rounds from I think it was an Uzi, as I recall. It's been quite a few years. But it was like at a watermelon. I mean, it was just, well, I guess I was at an event sponsored by the Small Penis Gun Club, you know. Wayne LaPetite had gotten us all worked up. And, I mean, there's something, you know, for boys, you know, there's something about, you know. Look at that. You see all that stuff coming to the end of that thing? It's just all over, you know. But, you know, I know people who are serious marksmen. They take target shooting really seriously. You know, how many can you get in the first three rings? The five rings? You know, how many bullseyes? They compete. And sometimes they take it seriously because it has to do with their work. I mean, you know, they're police officers or in the military. But sometimes it's a sport. You don't need a 30-round clip for that. In fact, a good target shooter is very, very proud to fire off those shots one at a time, each one very carefully lined up. Now, on the other hand, if you're trying to declare war, whether it's war against six-year-olds, like that young man did in Newtown, Connecticut, or whether it's war against your government, like David Koresh tried to do, and then 2 years later on that same anniversary, which was also Hitler's birthday, you had Tim McVeigh blowing up the federal building. I mean, if you're going to declare war, then you need a weapon of war. And I keep hearing this rhetoric from people who say, I should have the right to use a gun to fight off a tyrannical and oppressive United States government. And I'm telling you, and this is not liberal talk show host talk, this is history. There was no discussion at the time the Second Amendment was crafted about citizens being armed so they could take down the government that the people who crafted the Second Amendment were working so hard to protect and build. What they were trying to do was prevent there from being a standing army during a time of peace, because they knew that standing armies during times of peace get into mischief. They had seen government after government over the previous couple thousand years since the Roman Empire fall to the hands of military juntas and military coups. They didn't want that to happen here. They had seen military armies get larger and larger and larger, corrupt the civilian sector, the creation of what Dwight Eisenhower referred to as the military-industrial complex. They didn't want that. So they put into the Constitution in Article 1, Section 8, that no amount of money could be appropriated for the Army. You could do it, for the Navy. You could have Navy all day long, but no amount of money for the Army could last more than 2 years. So, and Congress doesn't last more than 2 years. Each Congress is 2 years, because every single member of the House of Representatives is up for re-election every 2 years. So every 2 years, we have to reconsider whether we even want an army. That was their intention. So if you're not going to have an army, how do you protect yourself? You have a militia. You have individual citizens who are answerable to local authority, which is answerable to a state authority, which in time of national emergency is answerable to a federal authority, and those militias can be called up during a time of crisis. And when, for example, a bunch of whiskey distillers decided to rise up against George Washington's government, he rode down there, I believe it was North Carolina, wasn't it? Maybe it was Virginia. Anyhow, he rode down there and organized the militias, pulled together the militias, and he wasn't leading them by the time they got to where the whiskey rebellion was going on, but he put it down with the militia. Shays' Rebellion? I mean, the whole point of having having the right to have a weapon was having the right to be a member of a militia. And it frankly concerns me. I was going to say frightens me. It doesn't so much frighten me as I think it's just a tragedy that there are people in America who believe that the Second Amendment is there. So if a police officer shows up on their doorstep, they can kill him. Who believe that the Second Amendment is there, so if an IRS agent knocks on their door and says, you owe us some money, they can kill him. I've heard it asserted that the Second Amendment is there so that if somebody from the Department of Health and Human Services comes to your house to try to offer you Obamacare, you can kill them. This is not tyranny. And even if it was, the Second Amendment isn't there so you can overcome tyranny. If it was, you could have a tank. You really think that a tyrannical government is going to send one guy with one assault rifle? We have a way of dealing with tyranny rising in the United States. It's called elections. We still have them every 2 years, and sometimes more frequently than that. Number two, we have a free press. We have, you know, open discussions. We have freedom of speech and freedom of assembly. These are the weapons against tyranny in the United States, not a gun. You have the right to a gun to protect yourself, to go hunting if you want, to go target shooting as sports shooting. Nobody wants to abrogate those rights. I certainly don't. But to say that you got to have, a gun so I can kill a, you know, come on. This is fantasy. People have these weird fantasies. Anyhow, that, you know, that the government's going to get totally tyrannical and they got to take it to, you know, no. And you say, well, what about the American Revolution? We weren't fighting our own government. We were fighting the British government. They're on the other side of the ocean. We were fighting an occupying force. If Canada invades the United States, takes over the government, I'll probably join your militia. But for right now, if you want to deal with what you think is tyranny in Congress or in laws, join the Republican or Democratic Party or the Green Party or the Libertarian or Constitutional Party or something. Get out there and get active. But, you know, do not bring a gun. It is not going to do any good, and you're going to get hurt. Cora in Taos, New Mexico, listening on KVOT. Hey, Cora, what's up?
Well, I have to agree with what you just said. My concern is, what group is it that is going to say what government official to kill? I mean, here we have the two cases in Texas and the one in Colorado. And if it's true that it's the white supremacist group, I mean, they obviously have their agenda and don't think they should abide to rules.
Yeah, yeah, I'm with you. Cora, thank you for the call. Well said. Bob in Spotsylvania, Virginia. Hey, Bob, just have a minute to the break. You want to make a quick point?
Yeah, hey, Tom. You were talking to the guy from, I think, Louisiana that, you know, was trying to cite an example of when he would defend his house.
Right, Arkansas.
I think the guy was a little far crazy, but, you know, how about a legal search and seizure or something like that? I mean,
defend your house, I mean, this happens about 100 times a week in the United States where SWAT teams kick in the wrong door around the United States. You do not have a right to shoot the SWAT team that's kicked in the wrong door. You have the right to sue them after the fact. But your defense...
What if they kill one of your family members, Tom?
Pardon?
In the process. What if they kill a family member in the process?
If you start shooting at them, they damn well might. But if you don't shoot at them, they generally don't. And so, you know, I'm telling you, if you think that police officers executing a wrongly written warrant or mistaking your home number or even just, you know, nefariously for bad motives are kicking in your door and executing an illegal search warrant, take them to court. But if you try shooting back, you're not going to win that. You're not going to survive it.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
And that is not a constitutionally protected right to kill police. It is not. Occupying the media 3 hours a day, 5 days a week. Tom Hartman here with you. Keith in Gilbert, Arizona, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Hey, Keith, what's up?
Hey, how you doing? Yes, thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I'm active in the military, and there's a problem going on with this thought about the militias and this extremism in the active military as we speak right now. And it's such a underground type of thought that it's only identified by a trade on knee tag, just by who's in the certain amount of gun club.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something that I am, or someone other that's brown like me, are taking rights away. And no more put a boot in your ass the American way, Toby Keith style Republican. It's now the libertarianism. And it's starting to come out, and it's really starting to put a crack right in the middle of the cohesiveness of the soldiers in the military right now. And
wow.
A lot of people are brown and black in the military, I'm sorry to be so wordy, don't understand what's going on. They don't know these things, and if they don't listen to a show like yourself, it's totally going right. It's going right over their head.
So the white supremacists are organizing in the military, basically, is what you're saying.
Exactly, absolutely. So what they try to do just kind of to deter it for being exposed is to say, hey, certain guys, now we got guys that are gangbangers in the military. Look at the tattoos, because the military is allowing, especially the Army, allows a lot of guys with tattoos. So they try to say, hey, we got dope dealers and gang members in the military. And I'm not saying there's not 100% that maybe not going on. But definitely we have people with these extreme thoughts and views, militias, guys going out and shooting guns every weekend in our military.
In the military. I mean, that's amazing. Because, you know, the thought virus that has infected these guys is that they're going to take out the military when it becomes oppressive. And if they're in the military, who are they going to take out?
Mr. Hartman, it amazes me. I hear guys say things, and you know, you can tell the room will get quiet when you walk in. I am an officer. The room will get quiet when you walk in, and then the conversation picks back up. I was in the field with the guys with our whole brigade when the president was reelected, and you heard guys just shudder that they're getting out of the country, and there's this and there's that. It's a serious, serious problem.
Yeah.
A serious problem that's going on in our Army, and we better wake up to find out about it.
Yeah. Okay. Keith, thanks for sharing that story with us, and thank you for serving your country. Much appreciated. Steve in Haymarket, Virginia, listening on Sirius. Hey, Steve.
Yeah, I think that we keep missing that. We go around about this militia, but virtually every man, woman, and child in America is a member of the militia. So, you know, that's...
How do you come to that, Steve?
Well, basically what it is in the Constitution and a definition. And, like, I got my Marx...
Can you identify that part of the Constitution for me, Steve, so I can look it up? I'm not familiar with it.
Looked it up, but at any rate...
I'd like to know. I have the Constitution right here in my hand. I just put my reading glasses on. I'm all set.
The well-regulated militia being possible for a secure...
Being necessary state. For the security of a free state. That's the Second Amendment.
Necessary free state. That means everybody's in the militia. Like you say, George Washington went out. What did he do?
It doesn't say that, though. And Article 1, Section 8 says to provide for organizing, arming, and disciplining the militia and for governing such part of them as may be employed in the service of the United States, reserving to the states respectively the appointment of the officers and the authority of training the militia according to the discipline prescribed by Congress. Now, you know, if you think it's every man, woman, and child, I don't recall anybody coming to me when I was 8 years old saying, you know, time to show up for your militia training.
Well, I got into it when I was a freshman in high school because we trained sharpshooting with 22 bullets, and then we had the M1 rifle in case we needed to do some serious work. And let me ask you a question.
As part of what?
Why does Homeland Security need hollow point millions of rounds of hollow point bullets to go training with?
Because that's how you learn how to shoot. That's how you maintain proficiency. The numbers of the quantities of ammunition that Matt Drudge and all the guys on the right are all hysterical about are pretty much the same now as they were 10 years ago, as they were 20 years ago. You know, there's not some huge spike in the use of ammunition for training purposes. It has, you know, arguably it's higher because of the last 8 years because of the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. But
in other words, why would they have hollow points? Why not get full metal jackets, which are more appropriate for practice? Rather than hollow points.
If you're going to shoot hollow points, you should be practicing with hollow points. They shoot differently.
Yeah, but do you need five for every individual in the United States?
It depends on the kind of training you're doing. When I was going through the Georgia Police Academy, I mean, those guys would go through hundreds of rounds.
Yeah, I know, but it's like I say, they're cheaper if they're full metal jacket's cheaper, and it's a hard.
Yeah, but do you really want people who may be protecting your life to be training using a different kind of ammunition that they're actually going to use in the field, so that their firearm is operating slightly differently? It feels different. It fires different. It's got a different kind of, you know, a different trajectory, a different, you know. I don't think so.
It's irrelevant. And then the other thing is, the most potent military force in the history of mankind was defeated in two countries by a bunch of goat herders with small arms weapons. And that's Iraq and Afghanistan. And that's the whole purpose for the Second Amendment.
No. No. We occupied those countries. You cannot maintain an occupation of a foreign country for very long before the people will throw you out. And yeah, they may well throw you out with weapons. And I would agree with you that that's the purpose of the Second Amendment, in as much as in the War of 1812, when the United States was occupied by Canada and Great Britain, the militias were called out. James Madison left the White House to lead one of them. He's the only president who led a militia during time of war as president. The militias were called out to repel the invaders, the British and the Canadians. But the militias are not there to overthrow the government of the United States. It's not. That's us. We don't overthrow ourselves.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And some really interesting topics out there here. Daniel J. Flynn, conservative author, contributor with the American Spectator, author of A Conservative History of the American Left, Flynn Files, FlynnFiles.com, his website, and has a new article out titled Shush, about how his library that he uses regularly has become basically where the mentally ill people and homeless people hang out. Daniel, welcome to the program.
Hey, thank you for having me.
So, first of all, you want to describe the situation to us that you characterized in your article?
Sure. I've been writing a book called The War on Football for the last 8 months or so, and I found my local public library, it breaks up kind of the monotony of my desk at home. So I go there for about 4 hours a day. So I can't, complain too much because I go there every day. I have 14 items checked out right now. Not all of them are books. I love the library. But at the same time, there's a bit of a mission creep that's going on. And I think the mission creep invites creeps into libraries. Now, to give you an indication of how extreme this can be, there's a school near me called the Cushing Academy. It's a fancy prep school, $40,000 a year. You pay that 40 grand. It doesn't even allow you the ability to check out a book in the school's library because they've decided to do away with books at their library. And instead, they spent $500,000, revamping the library into what they call a learning center. It has three giant screen TVs, a cappuccino machine, but they don't even have a single book. Now, it's not gotten that bad in my local library, but I think the emphasis on DVDs, the emphasis on computers, the emphasis on CDs, and even now video games at some libraries has brought a crowd into the library that aren't in the least bit interested in, what a library is set up for.
Yeah. Now, libraries are among our most enduring socialist institutions. When Ben Franklin first came up with this idea, at that time he had founded the Juno Society before the founding of this republic, and there was a group of him and a number of his friends, I think it was about a dozen of them, who would get together every couple of weeks and drink fine wines and coffee and they shared a library. They shared each other's libraries in this room where the Juno Society met. And then he said, well, let's open this to the entire public, not their own personal little library, but, this should be a public institution. And Franklin is generally credited as the father of the public library. And we've pretty much had public libraries paid for by we the people through our tax dollars as part of our commons, as part of the stuff that we all own in common since the founding of the republic. I agree with you that, they're great places and you should be able to have access to books and information. This is, the reason that Jefferson signed on to it was, and others of the founders, was that they genuinely believed that if the electorate was not well informed and didn't have access to information, regardless of their wealth, then you couldn't have a functioning democracy. So what it seemed to me that your article was mostly concerned with the fact that there were people who were in the library who were not there for the books. They were there to have sex in the restroom, or they were there to sleep, or they were there, you know, basically they were looking for other things. Do I have that right?
Yeah, that you have people who are there to use the library for what it was set up for, and you have other people who are there who are, you know, don't have any place to go to during the day, and
right.
So they use it to talk rather loudly. They use it to play The Sims and other. I see a lady; she plays the same video game every day. They use it for, to shoot up in the bathroom. And this is more of a maybe an urban inner city problem. And if you have, you live in a city, these are city problems, and
right.
Those city problems are not, the library's not going to be immune from it. But
so,
I wonder to what extent the mission creep in the library has sort of let in all the creeps and has made it more difficult for people who are there, for the books and for to basically enjoy
sure.
a citadel of quiet in a very loud world. I mean, I think one of the things that's terrible about the world that we live in, and we go to the gas station, there's a television blaring in our face. You sit in the back of a cab, there's a TV. Even at the checkout line now, there are televisions with advertisements and sending you all sort of messages. The library, to me, is a place where you can get away from that. And increasingly, with some of the changes that have gone on with libraries over the course, of the last 10, 15 years, it's less of a citadel against all that loud world. It's become a part of the loud world. An
right.
example of this would be, every November, the American Library Association, they hold something called National Gaming Day. And they boast that this is the largest simultaneous national video game tournament ever held. To me, video games, they anesthetize minds. Books
yeah.
stimulate them. So,
I don't disagree with you, Daniel, although I'm guessing that the librarians view this as a way of introducing young people to libraries, and I think you and I would both applaud
exactly.
that. But there's a larger question here, and this is the larger issue that I think that, really, if we're going to have a conversation about this from both the left and the right, we should. And that is shouldn't there be public institutions that provide mental health treatment to the people who are mentally ill, that provide addiction treatment to the people who are addicts, that provide, that provide housing and a job to the people who are jobless or homeless? I'm old enough to remember before Reagan, stopped funding mental health in the United States and basically, opened the doors, and all of a sudden we had homeless people all over this country. Libraries are fairly quiet places in the 60s and 70s and the 50s. And, they haven't been now. Shouldn't we be doing something about these social problems that are popping up in your library?
Certainly, and I think
what would you do about
where
that?
Where my library is situated, there are a great deal of social programs, and that's just it. There's the Social Security Administration across the street. There's two homeless shelters within walking distance, and I see the people. Basically, the homeless shelters tell them, 7 a.m., go out into the world and work or do whatever. And if they don't have a job, if they don't have something productive to do, a lot of these folks go to library. Most of them don't. Most of them aren't loud and aren't bothering anyone, but there are some of them that are severely mentally ill, and they make it kind of a drag for everyone else.
Yeah.
I wouldn't go into the home. I think the homeless shelter has a purpose, and I wouldn't go into the homeless shelter and put in a bunch of stacks of books saying, hey, everyone read. I don't see why the homeless shelter should come into the library and sort of crowd out the purpose of the library.
Right.
Homeless shelters serve a good purpose. Libraries serve a good purpose. I don't know that we should mix the two and act as though we're doing a good thing when we turn the library into the homeless shelter.
I agree. Why? And in fact, I'd take it a step beyond that, and I would say that beyond short-term emergency services, we shouldn't even need homeless shelters in this country. That, if we were to go back to the standards that we had in the United States from the mid-1930s until the mid-1960s, and basically say that the government is the employer of last resort with the WPA and the CCC, you would not have that many homeless people. Oh, and by the way, we will provide you with free mental health care and institutionalization, both things that really came to a screeching halt during the Reagan Revolution. then we would not have homeless people, we would not have mentally ill people on the streets, and they wouldn't be showing up in your library.
You know, I don't know that Ronald Reagan invented homeless people. It's sort of a convenient fiction. If you hate Ronald Reagan, you're going to say this. There were no homeless people prior to Ronald Reagan. There were. You know, of course, the deinstitutionalization.
They weren't the mentally ill homeless, though. I mean, there were a few paranoid schizophrenics who were absolutely unwilling to go into any facilities, but they were few and far between.
And a lot of
I was there.
To do with chemical dependency, and you have a lot of men who are dependent on chemicals.
Sure, and we should be treating that. We should be treating that, and there should be treatment centers for those folks. But, you know, conservatives are constantly saying, oh, no, we can't fund that. Am I right? Wrong? Okay. Daniel J. Flynn, his website, Flynn Files, FlynnFiles.com. Thank you, Daniel.
Hey, thank you for having me.
Good talking. Good talking.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
See, I see, you know, I agree with Daniel that a library should be, you know, a nice, quiet retreat. And, you know, we need to figure out ways to solve these problems. Welcome back to the place where despair is not an option, the Tom Hartman Program. Wayne in Bristol, Connecticut. Hey, Wayne. You wanted to talk about the Second Amendment?
Yeah, how you doing, Tom?
Good.
Hey, it seems, it always strikes me kind of curious how all these pro-Second Amendment, pro-gun rights, people, they're so pro-military, real hawkish, we got the greatest military in the world, but they also think that them and a few of their buddies are going to overthrow the government.
Right.
How does that jive?
I don't know, and I keep asking them. I mean, they keep calling into this show saying, I got to have my guns so I can stop a tyrannical government. And I'm like, okay, how's that going to work? How are you going to know when the government's become tyrannical? Well, I don't know. How are you going to know that you've got to take them out? And who are you going to start shooting at? What, the county sheriff? I mean, you know, you think the army's going to show up and they're going to show up, what, without a black helicopter? I mean, I think that these people are stuck in an adolescent fantasy that has been peddled to them by right-wing talk show hosts and Fox News and the fear machine, you know, over in Glenn Beck's stand. And they haven't thought through the logical consequences or outcomes of this stuff. I mean, they just haven't thought it through. They don't know what they're talking about.
Doesn't make any sense to me at all.
Yeah, me neither. Wayne, thank you very much for the call. Ernest in Plant City, Florida. Hey, Ernest, what's up?
Hi, Tom.
Ernest, I can't hear you.
You can't?
Now I can hear you.
Okay. The Militia Act of 1793 and again in 1903, Militia Act, both state that all able-bodied males between the ages of 18 and 45 are in the militia and in view of the fact that now women are being allowed in combat, I should think they would be in that too. Which would mean that everybody's in the militia.
No, no.
Yeah.
Militia Act of 1793.
Yep.
And what did you say, 1903?
In 1903.
Okay.
That would be the one that's pertinent now. The first one said all white males.
Ernest.
And it also requires
you
to go out and get a musket.
Okay. I don't know of what you speak, so let me do some research before I shoot my mouth off here. Thank you for the call. Tina in Jay, New York. Hey, Tina, what's up?
Hello, sir. In lieu of the of the audience today and the comments you make always, I wanted to mention that I'm currently reading Chris Hedges' new book, and he references Sheldon S. Wolin, a political philosopher who calls our government an inverted totalitarianism. Which differs from classical totalitarianism or / tyrannies in that in classical tyrannies, politics ruled over economics. Economics was subordinate to politics. But in America today, our system of power is an inverted totalitarianism where economics rules politics. So I want to say to the people who are armed and ready to throw over the tyrannical government that the government is the Koch brothers. The government is ExxonMobil that they are so fearful of because the political figures are shills for the real power in this country, which are the corporations.
Yeah, I don't disagree. And the Supreme Court has handed
everyone's
it to
horizon
them.
There. I'm not for guns. I'm not for overthrow. I am for voting. I am for being informed. I am for peace and love and all that good stuff. I really am. But I listen to this, and these people are convinced. Well, if they're going to be convinced, they need to have the facts. And the figureheads they call government are merely that, figureheads, and easily replaced if we took them out.
Yeah.
By the real ruling class in this country, which is the corporate class.
Yeah. Tina, I cannot disagree with that. Thank you very much for the call. Jerry in Amityville, New York. Hey, Jerry. Thanks for listening to me.
Yeah, hi, Tom. Yeah, Tom. Yeah, I agree with what your last caller, Tina, was saying with respect to what I would call a corporatocracy. And I also agree with you on the gun issue that we need to outlaw both certain types of firearms, like those modeled after weapons of war, and also outlaw certain types of high-capacity ammunition clips. But requiring all gun owners to buy insurance, in my opinion, is just going to make money for the insurance industry. And if, for instance, we look at the life insurance industry, most life insurance policies have suicide exemptions with respect to their paying out on life insurance claims. And I think gun insurance would probably also have a suicide as well as a homicide exemption.
Well, you
and
could
so
specify.
I don't think it's really.
No, you would have to specify at, if you're going to draft a law that says here's the kind of insurance you've got to have, then that law should say. Yeah. I mean, if somebody commits suicide with their car. Well, I don't know if car liability insurance have policies have a suicide exemption or not, but should not be allowed. I mean, if we're going to create this thing from scratch, Jerry, I think we can overcome your objection. Thank you for the call. Russ in Buffalo, New York. Hey, Russ.
Hey, Tom. Remember the old Westerns when somebody robbed a stagecoach or robbed a bank or something and Marshall Dillon would get a posse together?
Yeah. That was the idea of the militia, basically.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. The posse was people who were, their names were written down, but they had to be deputized by the marshal or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
To form the posse to go get the bad guys.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree with you. Russ, thanks for the call. Sid in Corona, California. Sid, got a minute to the break. You wanted to comment about video games?
Yeah, they don't make people infantile as much as a book would. I mean, if you look at Bioshock, that talks about Ayn Rand's philosophies. Bioshock talks about when does robotic life or artificial intelligence become sentient life, and how does one create a sentient life, but then not treat it as a slave or things like that. I mean, yeah.
In other words, you find intellectual stimulation in some of these video games. I'm not
absolutely.
I'm not saying we shouldn't have video games. I think that what our caller was saying was he didn't think that libraries were appropriate places for them. I don't have a problem with video games in a library. I just would like them to be in their own room, in their own separate space, because the process of participating in a video game is very different, particularly the ones where, they've got sensors for your body and you can move around and things. So the more sophisticated ones is very different than the process of reading a book, and they should be in different places. But I'm inclined to agree with you, Sid. Thank you for the call. The big question is, why are conservatives liking the socialist institution of libraries?
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
That was what surprised me in the first place. I mean, here I got a conservative and he likes libraries. I thought libraries were supposed to be profit opportunities. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And Sam in Mapleville wrote, we were looking up the Militia Act here during the break, but I don't pretend to be an expert on it. Hey, Sam, thanks for listening to WCPT's stream over there in Mapleville, Rhode Island. What's up?
Not a problem. I looked up the Militia Act of 1903. It has nothing to do with who is or is not part of the militia. All it does is it formulates the concept of the National Guard, and also puts the militia under the authority of the Federal Army Reserve so that state governors couldn't use it like their own private army, essentially.
Right. Right.
So,
and the Militia Act of 1792, there were actually two Militia Acts of 1792, provided for the creation of militias at the state level with some federal
oversight.
Yeah,
I don't know where that guy was getting that from.
Yeah. Well, that's why I said I don't want to respond to it, because there is all, in particular, the people who are claiming that the federal government doesn't have any authority, that the federal government is just a corporation, that we can operate separate from the Constitution, that, you know, quack. I mean, there's all these weird conspiracy theories out there, and they come up with these notions, and I suspect that this is one of them. Oh, we're all members. Everybody's a member of the militia. Well, no. And
just point out how George Wallace tried to use the National Guard to block desegregation, and the federal government said, no, sorry, we're in charge of the National Guard.
You're right. That's a great example. And yeah, it's a very good example. Sam, thank you. And one I remember.
Thank you.
Thank you, Sam. Much appreciate the call. David in Fort Benning, Georgia. Hey, David, what's up?
Hey, Tom. I listen to you a lot. Every opportunity, I get really.
Are you at Fort Benning because you're active duty military?
I'm at Fort Benning because I'm active duty, but I'm in the National. I'm in the National Guard, but I'm on active duty orders.
Okay.
So I am in the military.
So what do you think about these guys who say that they need to stockpile a bunch of guns so that they can shoot at you?
Well, I don't think that they're talking about shooting at me, because I don't think that the average American soldier is going to take up arms against his own citizens. So I don't really, as a citizen, I don't fear that really happening. I think you would see a lot of defections.
It happened at Kent State.
From the military. Say again?
It happened at Kent State.
Well, sure. Well, yeah, it did, and I think that's a crazy isolated incident with the U.S. military.
Mm-hmm.
I think what happened there was actually outrageously out of control. I mean, it's a crazy thing that happened. But I would say the thing that kind of fascinates me about you, I listen to you a lot, is that you seem to have absolute faith in government. Like you believe in
I don't.
Government.
Here's my position, David. I agree with Winston Churchill. Democracy is one of the most miserable forms of government there is, but it's the best that we've invented so far. What's your alternative?
I'm not saying I have an alternative. I think that I'm not saying that democracy is a bad form of government, but I mean, I think when you look at the history of, say, a country like Germany from 1933 to 1945, we're talking about a government that rounded up its own citizens, made them work at forced labor, that murdered, you know, millions of people.
Yeah.
of German citizenry.
The majority of the German citizen. In fact, Hitler in 36, 37, 38, even 39 when he invaded Poland was arguably the most popular German leader that there had ever been in history. Let me give you just a quick crash course on my take on Germany and Japan. That both of these were examples of what happens when a government falls under a cult leader. When a cult leader comes forward, and I'm literally talking cult, C-U-L-T, a cult leader. When a cult leader comes forward and says basically that he is the Messiah. I mean, there were Germans who believed that Hitler was the reincarnation of Jesus. There were Japanese who so completely believed that the emperor was the multi-generational child of the creator of the universe, the sun god, that they were willing to crash their planes into the decks of American ships and die in a blaze of glory on behalf, you know, because they would immediately go to heaven and be with the emperor's ancestors. These were cults. And when these cults took over these countries went insane. And when the countries were defeated at war, there was a moment where and I say this about Germany in particular, because I actually knew a few people, and one of them may still be alive. I'm going to find out later this week. I'm going to Germany, but several others have died since I first met them in the 1970s. But, you know, I've known a number of people who were members of Hitler's military or who were, quote, good Germans during that era. And after they were defeated in the war, it was like it's like deprogramming. It was like suddenly they look at what happened in the concentration camps and what went on, and they said, how could we have done that? You know, it's like waking up from a bad dream. When a cult takes over a government, the government goes down. But a few guys with guns are not going to stop that, because the vast majority of the Japanese people were behind Tojo, and the vast majority of the German people were behind Hitler.
A couple of guys with guns may not be able to stop that. That's probably true. But I'm still not willing to hand over my guns to the government. I'm still not willing to say that I...
I'm not suggesting you should. What I'm saying is two things. What I'm saying is number one, that the reason why we started registering, insuring, and requiring proof of operator proficiency for cars in the 1920s was because they were starting to kill people. We realized they went fast enough and there were so many of them out there that people were dying. We had to come up with basically rules for the road. And we should be doing the same thing with guns, number one. And that's it's got nothing to do with taking guns away from people. That has to do with individual personal responsibility, the first conservative standard.
But, my gun was registered when I purchased it. When I bought my handgun at a gun store here in Georgia, it was registered in my name.
Good on you.
But what is that going to do? Is that going to prevent me from committing a crime with it, or if somebody steals it from me, is it going to prevent them from committing a crime?
If you had a liability insurance policy for you and that gun, and somebody steals that gun from you and uses it in a crime, or you give that gun to somebody and they use it in a crime, then at least that crime victim is going to have some compensation. If those 20 kids who were killed in Newtown had been killed by a drunk driver, GEICO would be given $1 million to each one of the families. They would at least have money to pay for funerals. Instead, because they were killed with a gun, they're getting nothing. Squat. Bupkis.
Well, where should we stop, though, Tom? If we're going to make people have insurance policies on their guns, then why not on their kitchen knives, their baseball bats, and their golf clubs, too? Those can be used to kill people as well. I mean, if that guy had gone into the theater with a baseball bat and clunked seven people in the head and they died from massive cerebral hemorrhage, is Louisville Slugger gonna pay out any compensation to those victims? Or, you know, why are we gonna stop with guns? Why don't we insure everything then?
Louisville Sluggers are not manufactured for the purpose of killing people.
And guns are not manufactured for the purpose of murdering people either. They are manufactured
for the purpose of killing people.
They are, and you know something, sometimes it's legal to kill people.
I know.
Okay.
Get this really clear, David. I am not calling for a ban on guns. I'm calling for the Barry Goldwater conservative principles of personal responsibility. You want to own a weapon? Be responsible for it.
I am responsible for it.
I believe you are.
I'm responsible with it. But again, you know, this talking about universal background checks and licensing and registration, that's not going to make any difference whatsoever.
It has made a huge difference in the countries that have done it. In virtually all the countries of Europe and in Canada, you have to register your gun. In many of those countries, you have to insure your gun. And in many of the countries, mostly the Scandinavian countries, Germany, you have to have a license demonstrating you know how to use your gun. You do those things, you can have guns. And a lot of people have them. In Canada, they got more guns per capita than we do here.
But
they don't have the gun violence problem that we have.
No, we have because it's a cultural problem in this country, Tom. It's not the guns.
It is free and easy availability of guns. It absolutely is.
In Switzerland, everybody has a gun.
No, that's not. Increasingly, that's not true. But your point, I think, is well taken. There are probably more guns per capita, or an equivalent number, similar number of guns per capita in Switzerland than there are here, and people have access to them. But people have access to them in ways that are responsible. Those guns typically are kept in local armories, by the way.
If you look at places like Chicago, New York, Baltimore, Maryland, you know, these are some cities that have some very strict gun laws. But yet over the border in the state of Delaware,
They do not have strict gun laws. They do not require people to insure their weapons. They do not require people to register their weapons. They do not require people to demonstrate proficiency to use their weapons. State or city have those things if the ones around them don't. Then it becomes a joke. But the larger point, David, is do you really think, I mean, you're a member of the militia, of the military, and do you really think that you are going to use a weapon someday to stop your government from being tyrannical?
I don't know that I'll stop you.
How does that work?
Hold on a second now. When I become a citizen at the age of 62, when I retire, that's maybe my mindset will change. But it's not using a weapon to stop the government from becoming tyrannical or stop it if it does. I have a right to defend myself. Yeah, I mean, when the government can suspend habeas corpus and basically put you in jail without any trial, any hearing, any legal proceeding whatsoever, then what rights do you really have?
So let's change those laws. Do you really think that you're going to be able to shoot it out?
I would rather go down with my barrel smoking.
Okay.
And to walk.
You and Charlton Heston. Okay, I got it. David, thank you very much. I'd rather sue the bastards in court and win. We'll be back. Occupying the media 3 hours a day, 5 days a week. Tom Harbin here with you. And our Talk Radio News, Ellen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service, brought to you by goatsfortheoldgoat.com, where you can give a goat to help a rescued slave and receive a photo of your goat and the person you helped. Hey, Ellen.
Well, hello. I guess there's a lot of news coming out, and one we'll start with Korea. As you know, Korea is making all kinds of noises, probably just noise, but they're making it anyhow. The United States is taking a destroyer and putting it in the Korean waters. We're also having F-22s do actual exercises with the South Korean military. I mean, that's not terribly surprising. Moving the destroyers is not terribly surprising either. I mean, we can't just let somebody threaten the United States and say we're not going to do anything.
Right.
Even if they're not going to do anything.
You know, the last five South Korean presidents that have been inaugurated have, within their first year, had to deal with incredible provocations from the North. This is not something that should be all that surprising. On the other hand, the guy who's running the North now is a kid. And maybe
likes video games.
Yeah, and a delusional one. And I'm hoping he didn't see that movie Olympus Has Fallen. It seems to me like this is a very dangerous game. On the third hand, you know, we now have the technology that we could, if we took out, you know, during World War II, we knew where Hitler was and we never bombed him. They knew, you know,
where the tracks were going
to the concentration
camps
and they
we
never
didn't
took
bomb them.
That's right. And the Germans knew where Churchill was a lot of the time, and they didn't bomb him. There was like this agreement that went back to the medieval times of the king never killed the other king. You always just let the peons kill each other. But I'm wondering if the rules of war have changed. I mean, if we were to simply take out the leadership
in Pyongyang.
In Pyongyang, yeah. And send a missile over that basically knocks out Kim Jong-un, and that's the end of his regime. Would everything collapse, or would the North Koreans rise up?
Well, it depends where
China falls.
Yes, on this issue, on the continuum, whether they sort of took over, because they're really a puppet state in some degree, not totally of China, but they're their only real trading partner.
Yeah, yeah, but I think it's a very uncomfortable relationship for China.
Oh, for sure. It's uncomfortable, but...
Yeah.
Caroline Kennedy, President Kennedy's daughter, has been appointed or will be appointed through the U.S. Senate to be the ambassador to Japan.
Wow. Cool.
She supported the president a lot, went up to New Hampshire during the primary and all that kind of stuff, and during the election, and really supported him.
She's now an ambassador, just like her grandfather was.
Right. Yeah. That's right. Very interesting that there have now been the sequestration, and the White House Office Management and the Budget is sending furlough notices to almost 500 employees. It's a little less than that at the White House. They say that what they're doing is they're looking at those fly cards that allow you to mobilely connect your computer to save money. They're going to give people some 2 weeks extra off or whatever it is in terms of furloughs. They're looking at contracts. They're buying less supplies. They say that the White House is feeling the pain of sequestration just like all the other agencies, that they're not exempting the White House. Interesting on that front. There is this just came off the wires, and I'm not really sure. We did not cover HHS today, so this is not our story. Mm-hmm. But we are hearing that small businesses like you and I, that want to buy health insurance for our employees, we're going to be able to offer many different plans, a sort of competing plan issue. Well, now it looks like HHS is delaying that to 2015 because they're not ready. So that means small businesses are not going to get competitive plans. It's probably going to be as expensive as it currently is, maybe more available. And this is in the states that are offering the different kinds of plans. I think there's 33 states that are to the exchanges. So it's going to be rough for small business. People might do better in doing on their own and having what we do at Talk Radio News, because once I'm in a plan, the price goes through to the roof because if I only have one eye. and my age. But what they are now thinking of doing, a lot of businesses are saying, well, maybe we should just have people individually go through the exchanges,
right,
and then you just reimburse the employee, which is certainly a possibility.
Well, and wasn't that contemplated in as much as what the exchanges do is basically become giant groups?
Right.
The state
becomes
so
you're
its own
competing
group.
Exactly as IBM or
right.
one of
right.
those big, you know, right. General Electric or one right. of those.
Yeah.
But that was the purpose, but it's not going to happen now to 2015.
Hmm. Okay.
This is really interesting. Baylor University just announced a study that they did with the U.S. Geological Survey. It says that people who live near asphalt pavement that is sealed with coal tar may have an elevated risk of cancer.
Wow.
They say that if it's used as a sealant, it can be a major problem.
Hmm. Which would be what? The suburbs? Because you don't see so much asphalt
right.
in the cities. It's
right.
mostly concrete.
So more in the suburbs, more in the country where you're seeing, you know, asphalt roads paved over.
Right.
I mean, how many times do kids sort of see fresh asphalt and they think
yeah.
it's kind of cool?
Yeah.
Not so cool.
Wow.
It's interesting today, there was the Easter egg roll at the White House lawn. Now, some people are saying that it goes back to Rutherford Hayes. I heard that it went back to Dolly Madison. The First Lady announced that it was in celebration of nutrition and health and activity, but also Science for the Public Interest, by the way, at the same time came out and said that some of the chains have poor nutritional quality, French fries, sugary drinks. They cited Applebee's, Chili's, Denny's, Ruby Tuesday, and Dairy Queen on their list. And this is at the same time.
The White House cited them?
No, this is Science for the Public Interest.
But
oh,
I see.
At the same time that the theme of the Easter egg roll today, 30,000
right.
people on the Easter egg roll.
Right.
And it's only been canceled, I think, during World War I a little bit and definitely during World War II. Other than that, it's been continuous for, you know, 150 years
time,
plus.
Yeah.
But the theme this year is healthy eating, and this is the same day that Science for the Public Interest came out with their report on restaurants.
Okay.
So that was very interesting. Also, Americans, speaking of restaurants, ate out less in February. A lot of people think that it may be have to do with weather or perhaps because the Social Security tax went back
yeah,
up.
Yeah, I think it's that. I think
that's
the,
right.
The taxes went up on working class people.
That's right, and that's the problem. And
yeah.
so people ate out less.
And that's a sign that the economy is going to cool down a little bit in the next few months.
Well, you've certainly been saying that, Tom Hartman.
I have. And I think the worst is yet to come. Ellen Ratner, goatsfortheoldgoat.com. Thank you, Ellen.
Thank you.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And Tommy Christopher on the line with us, media correspondent and White House reporter for Mediaite.com, Mediaite.com. And Tommy, welcome back to the program.
Oh, hey, thanks for having me, Tom. Happy day after Cesar Chavez's birthday.
Okay. Thank you.
Isn't it called that Dingus Day or something?
Yeah. Okay, back at you, brother. So you wrote a really thoughtful piece for Mediaite about the importance of the size of an ammunition clip. And it's a conversation that I don't think is being had in America. You want to share your thinking with our listeners and viewers, please?
Sure, yeah. I mean, if you go to Mediaite.com, you can take a look at the piece. But, you know, the past few months I've been looking, researching a lot about gun violence and previous mass shootings. And you know, there was one that took place in New Jersey where I live in 1949, and there were all these superficial similarities to the Tucson shooting. The fellow, his name is Howard Unruh, and he fired 33 shots, and he killed 13 people and wounded 3 in Camden, New Jersey in 1949. The thing that struck me, you know, the first time I read about him was this quote, that the last thing that he's quoted as saying publicly was, I'd have killed 1,000 if I'd had enough bullets.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I thought, you know, this is in 1949. He had 33 shots, but he was using a Ruger, so he had to reload at least 3 times. And it took him about 15 minutes to do all that killing. And, you know, in the 60 years since then, we seem to have not learned anything. You know, I mean, here you have these, you know, mass shooting after mass shooting, and especially in Tucson where, you know, the shooter was disarmed when he stopped to reload. It's like, what, you know, how much clearer a picture does the universe need to draw for you, you know, than that? Then, you know, you had this guy 60 years ago saying, if I only had enough bullets, I'd have killed 1,000 people. And our response over the course of 60 years has been to make sure that these guys have enough bullets to do that.
Yeah, and it turns out that Adam Lanza went through, what was it, 153 rounds or something like that in fewer than 500 seconds?
154 in less than 5 minutes, and, you know, that's not, I mean, he still had, he had almost 300 rounds of ammunition with him, and another 1,600 or so at home.
Yeah.
The other point that I make in the piece is not just about magazine sizes, although there is that, but also, you know, we're going to be lucky to even get background checks at this point. You know, so it's not just that people can buy these assault weapons and they can buy 100-round magazines. It's that anybody can do it. You could be, you know, if you go to a gun show, there's no background check. You could be a convicted terrorist and be able to buy this stuff.
Yeah.
It's just like we're just not paying attention to the signal that the universe is sending us. The other thing I didn't write, I mean, there's signs like this all the time. You know, I'm not sure people remember this, but the very same day that the Sandy Hook Elementary shooting happened, there was a mass stabbing in China at a school.
Yes.
You remember that, Tom?
I do. And the guy stabbed 20 some odd kids.
23 children and one adult were stabbed the same day.
Yeah.
And do you know how many of those people died?
None.
So if, you know, it reminds me of that, you know, the joke where the guy gets to heaven and says, hey, God, why didn't you save me when I was drowning? And God said, well, I sent you 3 boats.
Right.
It's like, we are drawing a picture for you.
Yeah.
You know, the very same day, there's the guy with the gun, and then there's the guy with the knife. You know, we've got the guy with the 33-round magazine that gets stopped while he's reloading. It couldn't be any clearer, and yet we're going to be lucky, like I said, even to get background checks. You know, the media, the political media, and maybe they're right, says that things like the assault weapons ban and the ban on high capacity magazines is dead in the water. We're not going to get those. And you know, I think the point of my column is that, you know, something worse than this is going to happen. And once again, everybody will say, "Oh my God, this is an unimaginable tragedy," and it's not unimaginable. You know, these things have been happening. It's not even a case of connecting the dots at this point. The dots are all touching each other right now, and yet we still do nothing.
And yet I got several of these calls today. I am constantly hearing from people, particularly in southern red states, who are saying, I need to have these guns, and I need to have these high-capacity clips. I need to have basically these weapons of war, so that when the government becomes tyrannical, I can fight back. And I ask the question, oh, how do you know when they're tyrannical? And it seems to boil down to when they come for me. And,
right.
And you know, then the question is, well, how do you know that they're coming for you wrongly? And do you really think that you're going to successfully shoot it out with them? And, well, I had one guy, actually, the last guy, just a little bit ago, the last guy, he said, well, you know, I'll go down in a blaze of glory.
Well, see, so that's the thing, Tom. You know,
seem to me like adolescent fantasies.
Right, and that's the thing. The real reason, that's the real thing that's standing in the way. And yet, you know, if you talk to people in Washington or even on TV, you know, they won't say that. They won't say, oh, well, what we're really doing is kowtowing to these survival nuts. It's for other reasons that we can't really quite explain.
But I don't think that these people are nuts, Tommy. I think that they're operating within a delusional world, but I don't think it's an insane delusional world. I think it's a delusional world that has been created for them very intentionally by people in the media, in particular the right-wing media, for the purpose of making more profits for the gun manufacturers who are, you know, big-time donors to politicians and are supporting many of the right-wing think tanks that are supporting a lot of the right-wing media.
Well, sure. There's a sucker born every minute. So you're right that there's people taking advantage of them. But, you know, I mean, we've got to figure out a way to stop being suckers. You know, because it, for the people that you're talking about who are waiting for their own personal, you know, Waco siege, there have got to be, you know, 100 people who are sensible, and yet when you ask them, you know, do you favor stricter gun control, half of them will still say, well, no, I really don't, even though 90% of them say, well, yes, I want background checks, because they've been sort of brainwashed by this whole, you know, guns equals freedom thing.
Yeah. You still there, Tommy?
Yeah, here.
Yeah. It didn't sound like that was the end of a sentence, but... But
yeah.
So
yeah, well, I mean, we've got to stop being suckers. You know, the right to keep and bear arms, you know, it comes with reasonable limits. Everybody knows this has been settled. Mm-hmm. This is not, you know, controversial territory. You can't have a rocket launcher. You can't have a machine gun.
Right.
And so, you know, the rest of us have got to say, all right, you know, you're free to have, you know, what you need, but the rest of us are free to feel safe from your freedom to have, you know, a 100-round magazine, and you know, any kind of weapon that you want.
Yeah, I wonder about the freedom and the rights of people who don't own guns and who don't want to live in a society that is, you know, where people are packing heat on the outside.
The thing that gets me is, you know, conservatives, throughout my whole life, they've always been the law and order party and, you know, like, yay, rah-rah, cops. And now all of a sudden, you know, when cops are saying, you know what, we're outgunned and we need these weapons not to be on the streets, all of a sudden nobody wants to hear it.
Right. Right. Yeah. Well, and it's really surprising how many police officers and police organizations have come out in favor of, I mean, at the very least, Dianne Feinstein's assault weapon bill. And yet you get Ted Cruz on the Senate lecturing her about the Constitution as if she, you know, I mean, this is the woman who was there when George Moscone was murdered, as if she doesn't understand gun violence or you know, and that was, you know, Harvey Milk. I mean, Dan White, rather, you had, you know, a guy who was killing government officials. it's insane. But I think I'd have killed 1,000 if I had enough bullets. A great meme. Tommy Christopher, you can read his article, and it's really worth reading, over at mediaite.com. Thanks, Tommy.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
Great talking to you, as always. We'll be back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
So what do we do in order to make sure that our government never becomes oppressive, if that's your concern? Welcome back to Talk Media for the rest of us. Tom Hartman here with you. Damien in Manorville, New York. Hey, Damien. Poll taxes? Really?
How you doing, Tom? Yeah, well, listen, you know, years ago, as you know, there was a poll tax enacted, and it prevented people who didn't have a lot of money to vote. And if you enact this insurance deal on guns, or for every gun you own, you have to have a separate insurance policy or whatnot, you know, that's just a creative way of saying, okay, most people aren't going to be able to afford this, so we'll be able to curtail their purchasing of guns. And, you know, that's really an unconstitutional attempt to prevent people from exercising their Second Amendment rights.
So the right to vote, you know, we actually passed a constitutional amendment outlawing poll taxes.
Yeah.
And the right to vote without having to pay, you know, voting is how we control our government. It's how we regulate our government. And guns are what?
Guns are a constitutionally protected amendment, just like voting. And we
A militia is a constitutionally protected.
No. Militia is, you see, the Supreme Court, this has already been established in the courts, that this goes beyond that. You have to understand what the framers were attempting to.
I do understand it. What you're espousing is what Antonin Scalia has said in the last 4 years, not what
courts don't agree
for 200 in the last 4 years. The courts don't agree with.
No, there's established.
But even in the not the Miller case, but even in this most recent case, Damien, the court said that reasonable restrictions on handgun usage were perfectly within the realm of constitutionality.
And look, as a gun,
I think having an insurance policy is a reasonable restriction.
Well, I agree with background checks. I'm somebody who I have arguments with people who I know that own guns. I own a few guns myself. One of your callers before said, well, it's kind of insane that, you know, we're looking to use guns to protect ourselves, but we're allowing these loopholes such as gun shows to, you know, and just for anybody to come, you know, mentally ill, criminal, to purchasing. I agree wholeheartedly with that. I do understand the level of paranoia some people have with, well, I don't want the government knowing that I own a gun. We're already outgunned by the government anyway.
I can sell you a list of gun owners. You know, the government, you don't have to worry about the government knowing it. The NRA sells lists of gun owners. The NRA will sell that list to anybody.
You're right.
And they'll sell it to the FBI if the FBI wants to pay for it.
Well, look, I live in New York, and in New York, when you purchase a gun, you have to have it. You have to have a background check. They, you know, you can't just leave with it. I had to go. The guy said, "Go take a long lunch. It's gonna take a little while. We're gonna run, you know, see if you have a criminal background, you know, criminal record." There's a whole slew of things they need to call the state on, and then they register my name. They associate my name with the social the serial number of the gun. And that's tied to me. So if I wound up selling this to some kid on the corner and that gun could be traced back to me, I can get in trouble, at least within the state of New York. So, you know, I'm for reasonable gun restrictions. However, you know, applying a tax, that's like a sin tax. You know, look, you're trying to shape people's behaviors through taxation. There's nothing more unconstitutional.
I am opposed to a tax on guns.
Right. Well, you know, good. But I will say this, you know, that or even insurance, you know, like it's the insurance.
Well, I don't see insurance as a tax. People. I see insurance as being individually and personally responsible for the weapon that you have chosen to buy. This is, in my mind, this is what I don't understand. I think I'm taking the Barry Goldwater conservative position on this. I am not saying. You know, we need to ban guns. We need to restrict guns. I'm saying people need to be personally responsible. Whatever happened to personal responsibility?
I agree, but get a gun safe. You know, you can't let. I have children at home. You can't let these guns just.
And if you have a gun safe and if you have trigger locks, then the odds are that the insurance company would give you a substantial discount.
Well, it's more money that, you know, I'm a Tea Party guy on a lot of levels. I'm taxed enough already, man. You know, I just did my taxes over 50%.
I'm not talking about a tax here, Damian. I'm talking about individual personal responsibility. If you want to own a car, you have insurance on that car. You want to own a house, you have insurance on that house. And I'm talking about just simple liability insurance. Most states require you to have the basic kind of liability insurance. So if the next door neighbor comes over and you know falls on your property and injures him or herself, then you at least can be responsible, financially responsible for what that injury might be. And it's one of the reasons why when somebody puts in a swimming pool or something or a trampoline, suddenly their insurance policy goes up. You know, because it's all about personal responsibility.
From what I understand, New Hampshire, maybe I'm wrong, but I understand that New Hampshire doesn't require its citizens to have automobile insurance, which I think is a little crazy, but that's a state issue. If the people of New Hampshire wish that be the case, fine.
I lived in New Hampshire for 5 years. I have no recollection of that at all. I'd have to go back and look, but I would be astounded if the state of New Hampshire let people not have car insurance.
It sounded strange to me, but several people I know have told me that maybe it's untrue. It does sound a little funky, but
yeah.
The point is.
Now, I can tell you in New Hampshire, though, if you want to buy liquor, you got to go out on I-93 to the state liquor store because the state has a monopoly on liquor in New Hampshire. So you got to buy your booze from the state and you got to drive on the highway to get it.
Well, they got to draw revenue somewhere. There's no state tax.
Because they got no sales tax or no state income tax. Yeah. It's absolutely bizarre. Anyhow, Damian, thanks for the good. It's a good conversation. Thank you very much. I just think it's about personal responsibility. I think, you know, man up. Come on. You want to own a gun? Register it just like you do your car. Insurance policies, I mean, we're probably talking $25-$50 a year for gun insurance.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
And if you can't prove that you know how to shoot that thing and how to maintain it appropriately and properly and store it safely, then I don't think you should have it. The bad and the very, very rhinocerically ugly. The good. Adbusters. The organization credited with starting the Occupy movement has announced a new campaign. Last week, Adbusters posted a message on their website encouraging like-minded activists to gather at any one of Goldman Sachs' 73 worldwide offices and engage in a new, quote, indefinite real-time live-action game, end quote. Group hopes to use its trademark radical political theater to shut down Goldman's offices and operations. A year and a half after New York police raided Occupy Wall Street's Zuccotti Park camp, large financial institutions like Goldman Sachs still dominate our economy. Occupy was a good start, but the fight against too-big-to-fail banks is only just beginning. Adbusters, keep up the good work. By the way, if you want to help out, search for hashtag Goldman on Twitter. The bad. Lanny Brewer. Late last week, Assistant Attorney General Lanny Brewer announced that he was leaving his job at the Justice Department's Criminal Division to take on a position at the D.C. law firm of Covington and Burlington. Brewer drew the ire of many Wall Street critics during his time at the Justice Department because he was unwilling to prosecute the architects of the 2008 financial crisis. He'll have plenty of time to protect banksters at his new gig. While earning a tidy sum of $4 million a year, Brewer will serve as Covington's vice chair and, according to the firm's website, help clients navigate, quote, congressional investigations and other criminal and civil matters presenting complex regulatory, political, and public relations risks, end quote. And the revolving door just keeps on revolving. And the very, very ugly Sue Everhart. Last week was a big week for proponents of marriage equality. The Supreme Court heard oral arguments in two cases concerning the right of same-sex couples to marry, and according to many reports, is poised to strike down the 1996 Defense of Marriage Act. Some Republican politicians and pundits have begun to see the writing on the wall, conceding that marriage equality is inevitable or that its supporters offer compelling arguments. Not Sue Everhart. In an interview with the Marietta, Georgia newspaper, Everhart, the chairwoman of the state's Republican Party, offered an interesting criticism of gay marriage. Say you had a great job with the government where you had this wonderful health plan. I mean, what would prohibit you from saying you're gay and you all get married and still live as separate, but you get all the benefits? I just see so much abuse in this, it's unreal. I believe that a husband and a wife should be a man and a woman. The benefits should be for a man and a woman. There's no way this is about equality to me. It's all about a free ride. End quote. Conservatives have made some strange attacks on gay marriage over the years, but Everhart's dismissal of the entire marriage equality movement as a stalking horse for tax fraud is really, truly unique. It's also very, very ugly. Incredibly ugly. Rob in Irvine, Kentucky. Hey, Rob, thanks for watching Free Speech TV on DirecTV. What's up?
Hi. I'm calling. I'm just watching your show, and I really appreciate your show because, you know, it tells the other side of the story. And I'm an NRA member, and I have been for many years.
You need to turn the volume down on the TV, Rob, because there's a delay and it'll just hopelessly confuse you.
Okay, good.
So you've been an NRA member for years, but what's the point you wanted to make?
Well, I guess the point I wanted to make was a couple of points. One, that, you know, that gun rights, and, you know, I agree with you that people need to be responsible for their guns and you know, the registration and stuff like that. I own several guns here in Kentucky, and that and I'm sure they're registered because every time I get one, I have to register them. I'm ex-military, and I haven't even shot some of my guns lately, but they're there for personal defense, and I don't believe in any gloom and doom government to take over of the world or anything. But we usually do a lot of target shooting, some hunting,
those are the reasonable and appropriate reasons to have guns: target shooting, hunting, personal defense. I mean, I'm with you, Rob. And all I'm saying is, you know, have some personal responsibility. We looked up, for example, we had a caller in the last segment who said, well, in New Hampshire, you don't even have to have car insurance. Well, not quite true. In New Hampshire, you don't have to have insurance that replaces your car if it gets wrecked. Some states actually require you to have, you know, an insurance that protects the value of your car. You do, however, have to have liability insurance. In other words, if your car kills somebody, that person gets, or their family, you know, gets some money or gets some compensation. If you do damage to somebody else's property, the insurance company makes it whole, makes it right. And that's what, you know, I just keep saying, you know, if Adam Lanza had been driving a car when he killed those 20 kids, you know, even intentionally killing them, GEICO would be paying out their families because there would have been liability insurance, even in New Hampshire. But because he was using guns, there's no, you know, the families don't even get burial costs. And these families are going to have to deal with some real stuff. I mean, really hard stuff. They need counseling. They need help. There should be somebody there to help. There should be an insurance company there that's saying, okay, here's $50,000. I realize it's not going to replace your child, but at least it's going to get you through the next year or so. You're going to have to take some time off work. You got to deal with funeral expenses, and you got to deal with some counseling. It's just crazy to me. And the kind of insurance, liability insurance, is not that expensive. Liability insurance for a car is not that expensive, and people use cars every day. Liability insurance for a gun would have to be really cheap. I'm sorry.
Well, here's the thing. I don't agree with the liability insurance on the guns, but one of the things that I think that they need to do is make sure the schools are safe, and schools do have insurance, and they should have, you know, they should have adequate guards for all schools, or at least I know they do here in our state. And
there were two armed guards at Columbine, at the military academy that the guy shot up. There were armed people all over the place. There were MPs. There was a door with a locked door with a electronic system, you know, the whole that they had hardened the door and all that stuff at Newtown. I mean, you know, half a dozen even armed guards standing there. If somebody decides that they're going to take them out, they're going to take them out. This kid was suicidal.
You know, that's true. So you may, you know, I'm kind of flexible on, you know, I can understand your opinion too. But one thing to remember here is, like you said, you got all those other armed people around. And, one of the things, from Sun Tzu's Art of War from thousands of years ago, it's almost impossible to defend yourself against a surprise attack. So
exactly.
I mean, I know that kind of gets off the...
That was my Jack Kennedy point. I mean, people say, oh, I need a gun to protect myself. And I'm like, you know, Kennedy had probably 100,000 guns that were protecting him at the time he was killed. Nobody is invulnerable in this world. You know, walking around with, you know, a whole bunch of guns stuck in your pants is not going to fix anything. It makes some people feel better, but it's not going to fix anything. So anyhow, Rob, I got to move along. Thanks for the call. It's great to hear from you. Pierre in Atlanta, Georgia. Hey, Pierre. You want to talk about the Declaration of Independence?
Hi, yes. Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to make a point about the Declaration of Independence, and that, you know, it does say that all men are created. The line that says all men are created equal, and we are endowed with certain innate rights, which are life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness.
No, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. It wasn't just limited to those three, but among these, yes.
Right, exactly. I believe that the writers didn't just write that in that order because it sounded good. I think they wrote that because there's a hierarchy. There's a point to life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. My liberty should not trump your life. There's a reason why we have speeding laws, and I think you made mention of that before on your program.
Yep.
There's a reason why we have DUI laws. There's limits to liberty because life is most important. From life springs liberty, and from liberty springs pursuit of happiness. And I think our laws should reflect that.
I agree. That's a very, very trenchant observation, a very, very smart observation. Pierre, Shano tells me that you are going to be the caller today who receives a free copy of the Tom Hartman Reader collection of my writings, and I'm going to put you on hold. He's on line 3. You can tell Danielle she's going to get your address, and courtesy of stamps.com, we will send you a book. Jay in Fanwood, New Jersey. Hey, Jay.
Hey, Tom. How you doing today?
Just great, but I'll get better. How about you?
Not so bad. Getting on my way home, so all's good, you know?
Yeah.
Hey, just wanted to make a comment. You know, I heard you making a statement, I guess, an analogy around gun ownership and insurance and you know, car insurance. And I guess the difference the distinction I think that you have to draw there is, you know, driving an automobile is a privilege, whereas gun ownership is a right guaranteed to us by the Second Amendment. And I think, you know, I don't know of any other right that we're expected to pay an insurance, or we have to go through these gyrations in order to, you know, to exercise.
All of our rights are circumscribed, Jay. Your right to free speech is limited to, you cannot yell, you know, fire in a crowded theater. You can't walk into a TV studio and say, I'm going to go on the air now. You know,
I understand that, but I think the difference is, you're talking about paying an insurance. I don't have to pay a fee for my right for free speech. And
well,
I would argue that...
Actually, you do if you want to buy commercials, and the Supreme Court has said that that is a form of free speech. And you know, you're going to have to buy it from the radio or TV station, or buy an ad in a local newspaper. The Article 1, Section 8, Sentence 7 of the Constitution specifies that Congress shall build roads. Now, if we don't have the right to transportation on those roads, I don't know why Congress, other than to have a post office, would specify that the Constitution would specify that. And that was before the Second Amendment was even written. That was 2 years before the Second Amendment. So I'd say our right to drive precedes our right to have guns.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
And we say, okay, you got a right to drive as long as you're 16 years old or 18 or 7 or whatever it is in your particular state. But you have to have insurance. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. By the way, former Alabama Governor Don Siegelman, America's last political prisoner. There's a movement to free him. I strongly encourage you to join, to sign on. It's free-don.org. Free-don.org. Or donsiegelman.org. You know, we'll get you there, too. A good man who Karl Rove put in jail because he was a political enemy. And it's just wrong. It's just wrong. Scott in Allen, Texas. Hey, Scott, what's on your mind?
Well, I got two things. For I was listening to the comments about the insurance, and I got a comment about that. But I have, I'm a what I would call a liberal, you know, in the middle. But I have a lot of friends since I'm in Texas who are what I would call fringe, right? They have the bunkers and the whole bit. And I'm seeing emails from them and Facebook posts from guns.com about President Obama circumventing our gun rights at the UN with Ban Ki-moon. There's always like a grain of truth, but, you know, it's always overinflated by these guys.
Mm-hmm.
What is up with this? And so that's the first question I want to ask.
There is nothing up with it. There are no plans whatsoever for the UN to impose any kind of gun control in the United States, or for the Obama administration to turn our, you know, our guns or regulations or anything over to the UN.
Yeah.
Period. Nothing.
I mean, there's
nothing to it.
We never turn our sovereignty over to the UN anyway, so it seems like a whole bunch of hyperventilation.
We have turned our sovereignty over to General Electric and ExxonMobil and Walmart.
Yeah,
You know, with these international free trade agreements, we've turned our sovereignty over to China and Japan and South Korea and Germany and Mexico, but not the UN. No.
Right. It just seemed like a nutty thing. The other thing I want to comment about, the whole thing you were talking about, the insurance. Let's just take the metaphor just a little further to cars.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if I'm driving a car, I have to get a regular license. If I want to drive a bigger car, like a RV or something like that, I have to get a special license for that.
Or a 16-wheeler.
And if I want to drive a 16-wheeler or, you know, whatever, then it requires a different license.
Yeah.
You know, why can't we have these graduated licenses for the guns and then seal it in with the insurance like you're talking about?
Yeah.
So that way my niece, I won't name any names because she is crazy. She's on lithium, and her mother has been expunged by her lawyer daddy. They have access to guns, and they have guns in the house.
Yeah.
If they come out and come pop me, you know, then their daddy's liable. I guess I'm jumping over a hoop, and what I'm trying to say is, not only do you have people buying guns for other people, you have people like, what's the name of that
doofus up in
Connecticut,
the
Alan
mom
Lanza.
That bought the guns.
Yeah, his mom bought all the
guns.
Guns.
She had no business having those guns in that house, much less taking her son to that event. He had access to all those guns. An insurance company would have made sure that she was paying out the wazoo for him to have access to those things.
Yeah.
Or she wouldn't have gotten the insurance.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that this is, you know, I don't understand why Republicans are not all over this and holding me up as a god, you know, because basically what I'm saying is turn this over to the free market, right? Let the marketplace decide, you know, how much it costs for somebody to have a gun. If somebody wants to have a gun and they have a long history of spousal abuse, it's going to cost them a fortune to get insurance. If somebody wants to get a gun and they have a perfectly spotless record, they're going to have no problem at all. And, you know, they'll be $25 a year. You got a liability policy for $100,000 or whatever the state minimum is. But it just seems to me like this is just common sense stuff. Scott, thank you for the call. Melissa, with regard to different gradations of operator policies, I don't want to get, you know, I just want to stay with one thing to begin with. I mean, we can talk about that down the road, but, you know, let's get this done. Melissa in Hopewell Junction, New York. What's up, Melissa?
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Fine. What's on your mind?
I just have a very quick response. You had a caller earlier who was claiming that we need a license to drive because an insurance, because driving is a privilege.
Hmm.
And he was claiming that he didn't want to pay for insurance because having a gun and the right to bear arms was a right.
Hmm.
If you follow his logic, then he must believe that because we have a right to bear arms, then you should get guns for free. I don't understand his logic. He says he has a right to bear arms, so he shouldn't have to pay out of pocket for his insurance.
Right.
He has to pay to buy the gun. So really, that is, it's like driving. It's
well,
like
and in fact, you could even take that a step further and say, you know, the Declaration says you have a right to life. Does that mean that all hospitalization and medical bills are free?
Exactly. And that was just my point.
Which I actually advocate.
Logic, that he didn't want to pay for insurance because he had a right to bear arms.
Yeah. Okay.
It just doesn't make any sense.
Good point, Melissa. Thank you. I wish I had thought of it when I was talking with him. Thank you very much for the call. My listeners are smarter than I am. It's so cool doing this radio show. Jay in Oswego, Illinois, listening to WCPT. Hey, Jay, what's up?
But I knew if I walked into the UPS store, you would take my call. So I'm in a corner.
Say what?
I'm in the UPS store. I've been sitting in my car, and I'm like, the minute I go in, I know he'll take my call.
I'm sorry. Murphy's Law.
That's right.
Jay, you want me to put you on hold and well, actually, we're at the end of the show. We got 1 minute left for the end of the show, so you're the last caller.
Let me hit it here. I think that when we look at all this, former military, I have guns, but if I really need them, I'll go get them.
Yeah.
So what I'm getting at is, I think this is more about the back of the mind assertment of rights, meaning. We have a culmination of things from NDA, to like the biggest one, drone legislation. Isn't that ironic? The drone legislation being passed on one hand and yet the guns being stripped on the other, and the dichotomy between both. We must question. We have so much going on right now that's part and parcel of a bigger thing, I think.
I think we can all agree that our country, that our government has overstepped in some areas, but the solution is in the ballot box. It's not in a weapon. Or are you and I saying the same thing?
To a degree, but I don't know if I believe in our system that much anymore. Aren't elections bought?
Well, then we've got to get involved and fix it, Jay. If we don't take it over, then the billionaires are going to, and then we're all screwed. Jay, thanks a lot for the call. Coming up tomorrow, why do conservatives take a holier-than-thou approach when it comes to excluding everyone else from God? I'll challenge conservative journalist Scotty Nell Hughes of the Tea Party News Network. Plus, we'll have the best of the rest of the news, along with your calls right here on the Tom Hartman program. And don't forget, democracy is not a spectator sport. Voting isn't enough. You got to participate. Go to free-don.org. Go to pdamerica.org. Tag your it. See you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to tomhartman.com.